You're listening to M2K Talk Archive Service, and we are listener-supported. We ask that you come to M2K Talk and click on the PayPal Donate button and donate a dollar for listening. We appreciate your voluntary support.
Hello, the world. This is Bill Brumbaugh, your host of the Proactive News. I'll let you know right off the bat again, coming up every Friday until we hear otherwise, unless circumstances dictate otherwise, Eustace Mullins is going to be my guest, author of 13 absolutely tremendous books. I believe pretty much the grandfather of a lot of the research that's been done in terms of discovering and uncovering globalism, some of the different causes of it, how we've been manipulated and capitulated into accepting it, the diverse attacks, the psychobabble that's being used. All these things descend from much of the subject matter that Eustace has talked about, and it's really a honor, pleasure, and blessing to have him up. In the meantime, let's get to a couple stories. He should be joining us any minute. Well, folks, isn't it good news that U.S. and China have reached a agreement? Well, not exactly an agreement. They're discussing an agreement. Well, not exactly discussing an agreement. Folks, you know, I'm so sick of the double talk and diatribe. Again, in Beijing, evidently American defense experts are working it out with China over not helping other nations build missile arsenals or develop nuclear weapons technology. Well, folks, let me tell you, I think the inside scoop on this poop is that China is going to be allowed to complete any contracts it's already undergoing. Now, that's real important, folks, because they're working with people there in the Middle East. They have openly threatened us about half a dozen times in the past couple of years that they're going to lay waste to the United States, bring down fire from above. I don't really think we need to discuss any agreement with those guys. We need to tell them what to do and what to chew as far as what we're going to feed them, and they had best go with it, because the fact is, folks, we put an embargo on Chinese goods. Yes, it would cause some economic chaos here in this country, but you know what? It would return a lot of business here to this country. It would not support slave labor. It would not support a nation, a huge nation, that, quite frankly, folks, supports the grossest violations of human rights by enacting them themselves. I say, folks, that we start playing a little hardball with China. They keep threatening us. I think that we need to take a step backwards, and we need to quit giving them most favored nation status. I think we also need to demand changes. This lily-livered, limp-wristed dancing around that we're doing, like, you know, we're going to go ahead and give you most favored nation trading status. We're going to go ahead and make you a permanent member of the World Trade Organization. These are all things we've been pushing for a long time, folks, and then we'll just simply hope that you'll change. Folks, when is it going to stop? When you've got a robber and thief, you don't cater to them and say, listen, we're going to let you take the silver this time, but leave the gold, okay, because we like the gold. Folks, nonsense and poppycock. Absolute insanity. I don't understand. By the way, our guest is up with us. Let's introduce him now, and that's Eustace Mullins. Good evening, Eustace.
Oh, good evening there.
I was talking in regard to the China-U.S. missile agreement. And
oh, yeah.
We're giving a little bit, they're giving a little bit, and my point is that, you know, they have already violated agreements. They've already helped aggressor nations, third world countries that, quite frankly, are very unfriendly towards us, and they've threatened us themselves. I don't think you need to come to a compromise or an agreement with someone like that. You have to take a hard line and say, here's a hard line, don't cross it.
That's right, and you never give up your principles in dealing with that kind of situation.
Yeah, no, we keep sacrificing lives, we keep sacrificing principles, and quite frankly, folks, it's a heinous situation. Eustace and I are going to discuss one of his books tonight, by the way, The Curse of Canaan. We're going to do, there's no way we can discuss it in a single E, but I want to give a brief overview of it as we can. I don't even know whether or not we'll even get to the 11th chapter or whatever, Eustace, but I'm really honored. Again, you're one of my heroes, and I appreciate the opportunity to take somebody that has given so much great information to the world and simply only ask that they use it. I'm really appreciative of you, Eustace. In the meantime, it's break time. We'll be back right after this. Bill Brumbaugh, Eustace Mullins, and The Curse of Canaan. Okay, friends, we're back. You know, Eustace, I can't remember a time in my life, and maybe in modern recorded history here, where we have seen more earth-shaking events and things happen at such a phenomenal rate. Then again, I wasn't around during World War II. I was born in 54. I wasn't around during the Great Depression. And those are times when a lot of things were fast-breaking, a lot of hearts were aching, and again, you know, it's always, well, things are going to be better. We have a new paradigm we're moving to. It's just the same old thing, just revised, revived, and rolled out once again.
Well, you're absolutely on target because the fact is we're moving into a new period of history. We're just completed 25,000 years, a total solar orbit. And now we're moving into an acceleration of knowledge, of power, of energy. In other words, the people of the world are on the verge of a great adventure, which is just starting. And, of course, you haven't seen any evidence of this in the media. They know nothing about any of this because, of course, they know nothing about anything.
Well, they seem to know when to keep their mouth shut and what not to say at the right time or wrong time. You know, when you mentioned about the 25,000 years, did you pick up on the story at all about the new comet that they have found?
No, I saw something about it, not much. But we're on a period of great discovery here, a discovery not only of our world but the universe. And this is the most exciting thing. This is why I've been so optimistic over the years. People say to me, Eustace, you've endured everything anybody could endure in your 78 years, and yet you're more optimistic every day. I'm optimistic because I see God is unfolding the world before us, and it's up to us to take notice of it and to benefit by it.
I agree. And I even though things look overwhelming and how would I say, the patriot cause looks underwhelming in some ways, the fact is that during times of great economic, social, or fiscal chaos, folks, the bottom line is that we have opportunities. It seems the elite, they're always ready to seize it, but as Christians, I believe it's time we start applying the true principles of stewardship. And I don't know about taking the country back, but doing what we should have been doing for a long time in the name of Christ, and then leaving it up to God whether or not he'll spare his hand of wrath on this nation.
Well, it's not a question, really, of taking the country back. It's a question of stopping people from stealing it from us. That's what we need to do.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Well, your book, The Curse of Canaan, has had a very profound impact on a number of people I know, and it's a marvelous book. And I'd kind of like to, if we could, give it a little breakdown, go chapter through chapter. Maybe during this short time that we have, 2 hours, we won't have the fullness of the opportunity to explore it anywhere near the depth and the credit I'd like to give it. But I would like to go through it kind of chapter by chapter, if you're amenable to that.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, the subtitle itself, A Demonology of History, what it does is examine the demonic presence of demons in history. And, of course, people say, well, I've never seen any demons, but there is a demonic presence. And what this book does, The Curse of Canaan, traces the demonic presence and how it manifests itself through terrible catastrophes, wars, revolutions, and so forth.
All right, and folks, that is the relevance of it. There is an evil that is profound, and it's always been around, but it seems to be at its apex when things are, how would I say, at their worst. And that's when Christians need to be shining, folks. That's when we really need to be at our brightest. And I think, again, the information that Eustace has written and penned over the years, you're going to find very relevant. I'm praying these radio shows, again, folks, make copies of them, give them away. I'm hoping Firefighters for Christ will give away another 50,000 copies of an interview I've done. That would be marvelous. Now, obviously, I don't have the finances to do that, and neither do you, but they do, and I'm hoping and praying again. We put a little pressure on them, contact them, and they'll get this information out. So, well, the war against Shem. Now, there's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of disillusion in regard to the movement of the tribes, despite the excellent work of Arthur Koestler and others. You know, we have a whole lot of confusion going on. And the war against Shem, I think that that clearly defines and aligns why the world situations are as they are in terms of territories. Please give us a breakdown of that, if you would, sir.
Well, the war of Shem comes right from Genesis 9:25, where God cursed Canaan. Cursed be Canaan, a slave of slaves shall he be to his brothers, Shem and Japheth. Well, because the Canaanites were condemned to be slaves of the Semites, Shem, the descendants of Shem, this is why the war against Shem goes on, because this is the slave rebellion of the Canaanites against the people of Shem.
Well, now when you say the slave rebellion, and when you say Shem, now who is Shem nowadays in modern terms?
Well, Shem is a son. Shem and Japheth were sons of Noah, and Canaan was Ham's son, who was the grandson of Noah, and it was the grandson, Canaan, who was cursed by God because of transgressions. And that's why he was cursed to be slaves. And that, from Genesis 9:25, is just as important today as it was when God made that curse many centuries ago.
Well, see, a lot of people look at Christ on the cross and they say, well, that starts a new covenant. Well, folks, that's true, but again, he didn't come to abolish, he came to fulfill. And that's the chill that I get down my spine, because so many people are like, oh, we got a whole new gig going, the Old Testament isn't relevant. I submit to you, folks, and I would like to get Eustace's reaction, it's as relevant as it ever was.
Oh, well, Christ on the cross, you know, people do not understand what the significance of Christ is. That is not the defeat of Christ. This is the victory of Christ. And in fact, the Bible says, if ye be Christ's, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to promise. So this is the promise, the new covenant. I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And this is it says, behold, the days are coming, Jeremiah 31:31. And this is what we have to look forward to. It's not, we don't have to worry about the past. Behold, the days are coming. This is where we are.
Well, and that's interesting because, again, there's a dichotomy going on in our society, and that is that trying to define issues in the Middle East. I mean, folks, that place is so wacky and messed up, it's not funny, but I think the issues in the Middle East were all dependent and contingent upon where the curses were laid, where the promises were kept, where they were broken, and those promises that were immutable and irrefutable. Are they conditional? Well, the bottom line is, folks, that whole thing in the Middle East goes down because no one kept their promise to God.
Exactly. They did not fulfill the covenant. The covenant was there. And, you know, I mentioned in my book, Curse of Canaan, my first revelation was that, quote, God has no secrets from man. You see, God is not keeping secrets from man. Man is keeping secrets from God, and this is where the problem is. God is not hiding things from us. We're hiding things from each other because of greed and trying to get ahead of other people and so forth. And God has no part of that.
And folks, like you can hide from God, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-present God of the universe, and yet we do, because we now define God according to our own parameters. You heard of Jack in the Box, folks? We put God in a box. And because of that, because we put finite limitations on him, we think that we can manipulate, we believe that we can hide, and he'll never chide us for it.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And you know what Jesus said? One of his great admonitions was, be not deceived. Be ye not deceived. And because we allow ourselves to be deceived, this is our vulnerability. We have to fight deception and expose deception. And, of course, that's what my work and your work is.
And I think, folks, that that is a worthy enterprise, the most worthy enterprise, because that's what Christ asked us to do. Well, now, in regard to the transgression of Cain, I think this is key because, folks, we see symbolism, we see occultism throughout the world today. And I think it's important that we understand the roots and the basis of that. And I believe transgression of Cain gives a lot of clear definition on that.
Oh, it certainly does. And in fact, I point out that all the conspiracies in history, especially during the last 5,000 years, it's actually different aspects of the same conspiracy. Some people fix on one aspect of the conspiracy and say, this is the problem. Others say another thing. But the thing is, all the conspiracies work together. All the conspirators are part of the same operation. And this is what people find very reluctant. They want to fix on what they're looking for is the magic bullet or the silver bullet. If they can only find out which little group it is doing all the devilment, then they can figure out what's going on. Well, it's not that easy because there's a lot going on, and it's a multifaceted operation.
Yeah, it sure is, folks. And again, when you follow back the different conspiracies, when you follow back the different organizational aspects to it, you'll find, folks, all this is intertwined, overlapped, and again, some of the most monumental events in history comes when the two respective agendas, and I say two, folks, there are variants on that, but I like to break it down into two, when they get to a point, folks, where they have to stand off against each other. And that's when things get very interesting. Now, in regard, if you had to break it down, I know John Daniels, who's been a guest on the show, likes to break it down in current terms into two generic categories. One is English Freemasonry and French Freemasonry. I'd like to hear after the break how you break it down as to what's going on. Is it pantheistic atheism versus socialistic capitalism? I'd like to get Eustace's definitions. And if you have questions or comments, folks, you can email me now. We're not opening the phones yet. At bill@proactivenews.com. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
The Berkey Sport. It's the best portable water filtration system you can buy. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. And it'll make the tap water at sports games taste like bottled water. Unlike other sports bottles, the Berkey Sport's patented filter is so powerful, it removes cysts, parasites, and harmful bacteria like E. coli, cholera, and cryptosporidium. It also reduces lead, heavy metals, chlorine, bad taste, and odors. The Berkey Sport is a must-have item for events such as sporting games, hiking, camping, boating, and automobiles. Mobile travel. Keep one handy for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, hurricanes, floods, and earthquakes. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go with you anywhere. So keep one in your car and another one at work. Get the Berkey Sport, normally $39, for the special price of only $34. Or get two for $65, a $13 savings. Order your Berkey Sport today by calling 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Hi, this is Bill Brown, host of the Proactive News, heard 5 nights a week from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here on Genesis. Did you know that I was a writer, researcher, and producer for 3 internationally acclaimed award-winning video productions? UFOs, The Hidden Truth, A Nation Adrift, and Bill Clinton's Rise to Power are those Hollywood-quality, hard-hitting productions. For the first time, they're available here on Genesis for only $24.95 each, including shipping and handling. Please call toll-free to 866-320-2121, 866-320-2121.
How is it that a private institution like the Fed can profit from lending U.S. currency, but when its member banks get into financial trouble, a government institution called the FDIC will bail them out? Is it good business for taxpayers to print Fed's currency, taking payment for materials and labor in the same specie? Should we have to take on debt and have money for commerce? In 1791, Jefferson debated Hamilton, refusing to leave our country in the grip of perpetual debt. Knowledge is power. For a free banking report, call 1-800-686-2237.
Are you one of the millions of Americans who suffer from gum disease like gingivitis? If so, hope has arrived.
I'd like to introduce you to Vitamir. Vitamir is the all-natural toothpaste and mouthwash designed to protect against and promote healing of gum disease. Unlike most toothpaste and mouthwash, Vitamir contains no alcohol, no sugar, and no fluoride. Instead, Vitamir products contain zinc to inhibit plaque growth and promote healing, folic acid to reduce inflammation, myrrh used since biblical times for gum disease, and clove oil. Gum disease is serious. Research links gum disease to health problems like diabetes, stroke, and heart disease. With a regular program of oral hygiene including Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash, your chances of experiencing gum disease will be greatly diminished. Find out for yourself why health professionals across America are recommending Vitamir. Order yours today from Cliff Scott Enterprises. Call toll-free 800-569-4340. That's 800-569-4340 or visit their website at www.cliffscott.com.
Now cassette and CD copies of Genesis programs are available in synthesized stereo. Recorded from inside the GCN studios and remastered in synthesized stereo for the best audio quality possible. And for a limited time, we now have even lower pricing.
Even lower pricing.
Cassettes are now $10 for 1 hour, $12.50 for a 2 hour show, and $15 for a 3 hour show.
CDs are $10 per hour.
Synthesized stereo. Make copies and pass them out to your friends.
Give one to your local station manager.
Just spread the word. Order your tapes now. Make checks or money orders payable to GCN Tapes, P.O. Box 240454, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55124. That's GCN Tapes, P.O. Box 240454, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55124. And as always, be sure to give us the name of the host and the date the program aired when placing your order.
Okay, friends, we're back. Bill Brumbaugh and Eustace Mullins. Eustace Mullins is the author of a number of brilliant books. The one we're talking about tonight is The Curse of Canaan. Folks, I'll be blunt with you on something, too. If you have any books in your library or reference materials, Eustace's books need to be the key of that. They need to be the center of that. And if somebody would like to get a hold of your books, Eustace, get a catalog or listing of them, I believe we didn't have a chance to work together on this yet, but I would like to offer those at my website, proactivenews.com. But in the meantime, if they want to get them right away, how do they do that?
Through the Bankers Research Institute, which is at Box 1105, Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
Okay, again, folks. Eustace, can you give that to us one more time, please?
Yes, indeed. Bankers Research Institute, Box 1105, Stanton, Virginia, 24401. All the books are available through that number.
Okay, great. Now, still in the transgression of Cain, I believe it was page 50 or 51 when you talk about the grand architect. Could you get into that a little bit for us? Because I think, again, Freemasonry is such a key issue to understand.
Yeah, well, Freemasonry actually goes back to Nimrod. You see, Ham's son, Canaan, had a son named Cush, and Cush had a son named Nimrod. Nimrod became the first dictator of the world and a totally evil person who founded Freemasonry and built the legendary Tower of Babel, in defiance of God's will. And because he did this, this became the rebellion against God, which has gone on to the present time. And Nimrod had such tremendous power because Ham had stolen the garments which God made for Adam and Eve before he expelled them from the Garden of Eden. Cush inherited these garments from Ham and passed them on to Nimrod, who became the most powerful man in the world, the mighty hunter, because he had these garments. They gave him tremendous power. And it was because of this power and the use of this power that Nimrod became the dictator of the world, the first ruler of the world.
And folks, that's real important because Olaf Hagee and I have done programs on the power of some of the garments, and we've talked about the robes, we've talked about different artifacts. There was real power in these things.
Total power, yes.
Yeah, and you know, we're not going to get into in depth and detail, that we have in the past, but the folks, you need to realize that you need to understand this. Now, let me ask one quick question. Was this power technological, or was it, I hate to use, I'll use the term supernatural.
Well, eventually, at first it was really physical power, more power than other people had, but it really was supernatural power.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that because I know two guys are going to send me emails asking me that question. So I figured we'd just get it out of the way right now. I've got a very well-educated audience. As a matter of fact, I feel my radio audience is probably the finest educated radio audience in the world. So, and it's our goal and opportunity to get them as best educated as possible. Well, now, you also get into the different levels of Freemasonry, and I find that relevant and important, too. Could you give us a little dissertation on that, please?
Freemasonry originated as a world movement because Nimrod, even though he was the ruler of the world, was finally killed by Shem, and Shem then chopped his body up into small pieces in order to lessen his power. And these pieces were hidden by the priest in the forest. And because they were hidden, the priests were the only ones who knew where the pieces of the body were buried. And this is the old saying, he knows where the body is buried. And that goes back to the origins of Freemasonry. The priests were the Gnostics, and the Gnostics knew where the pieces of the body were, and that's where their power came from. And this was the how Freemasonry became a world power and has continued to be a world power to the present day.
And Gnosticism, boy, there's a subject for...
Oh, Gnosticism, yes.
Yeah, we can do an entire show on that.
Oh, you certainly could.
Yeah, not to even scratch the surface. Well, Chapter 3, you talk about secular humanism, and I do find a relationship there from my particular view of Gnosticism and secular humanism. Can you take us through Chapter 3 a little bit, please?
Yes, indeed. Well, secular humanism, people talk about secular humanism today, but they don't really know what it is. It's a transitional power of Freemasonry, which went, as I say, after the secret hiding places of the body of Nimrod gave rise to Freemasonry as a world power.
And we'll have to break at that point. We do have a commercial coming up in 8 seconds. I lost time on the clock. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is GCN.
What will you do without freedom?
The Genesis Communications Radio Network.
You're listening to M2K Talk Archive Service, and we are listener-supported. We ask that you come to M2K Talk and click on the PayPal Donate button and donate a dollar for listening. We appreciate your voluntary support.
Eustace, I'm so sorry to lead you right into a break right as you're starting to flow. Folks, we were going to have Eustace give us a breakdown on his Chapter 3 in his book of The Curse of Canaan, Secular Humanism, and I did that right before the break. I apologize, Eustace.
Well, that's fine, all right.
All right, we're back, my friend. Go ahead.
Oh, well, secular humanism, I found the formula for secular humanism, which, as I say, is the transitional period of Freemasonry and the descendants of Nimrod. And I got it out of the Babylonian Talmud, of all places, where it was the will of Canaan. When Canaan died, he left instructions for his heirs as to how they should conduct their lives and their operations. And they said, five things did Canaan charge his sons. Love one another, that is, the criminals should love each other but hate everybody else. Love one another, love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters, and do not speak the truth. Well, we saw that on television last night when Connie Chung interviewed Gary Condit. He followed every principle of that. And this is actually the operating instructions which politicians used in this country. They love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters. They hate their masters because, of course, under the curse of Canaan, they were supposed to be slaves and do not speak the truth. And, of course, they never do. And this is the code of secular humanism, and this is the way that they control other people, because law-abiding Christian, hard-working people find it impossible to believe that these Canaanites can live like this, that they can love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters, and do not speak the truth, because this is not the way ordinary people live. And so it gives them a freedom to carry on their criminal operations, because the average person cannot believe that people live like this.
And that's the truth of it. That is so far beyond us. But, folks, that is the way it is. And I found Condit. We just got through with Bill Clinton, and now we're getting the same thing from Condit. I'm really hoping it'll do some severe damage to the Democratic Party and maybe the Republicans.
Well, it very well may. You know, they were going to rerun him, and now after his disastrous appearance, I think they're having second thoughts.
Well, hopefully they're having second, third, and fourth thoughts on that one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but anyways, okay. Well, you know, one of the things I found about secular humanism, being a formerly, I was proud to be an atheist, even though everybody has some sort of belief system, they have some sort of religion. It's incumbent in the nature of man, even if it's a religion and not believing in any religion. That, too, folks, is defined as a belief system. Secular humanism left me without help. It left me without hope. And I do know that as I went through my life and dealing with some of the media people that I did, movie stars and others, you get to a point where you see these people that are at the pinnacle of their art or profession or on the rise up, and they're more shallow, they're more lost than anyone else you'll meet the rest of your entire life. Apart from a God, I believe I probably would be dead now because, frankly, I wouldn't have any reason to go on.
Oh, yes. Oh, it is a hopeless situation because they have to give up everything that anybody wants to believe in. And, in fact, secular humanism, which is now totally in charge of our education, wants you to give up honor and integrity and loyalty and become like the Canaanites, hate your masters, love lewdness, love robbery. And when that takes over the educational system, which we have seen it do, now, you know, all the schools in United States were founded by Christians, including Reverend John Harvard, Harvard University, which is now a cesspool of homosexuality and left-wing insanity. Well, all these schools were founded by Christians, but by the year 1900, John Dewey and this crowd of secular humanism moved in and took over the entire educational system. And they banned honor and integrity and learning and made it part of the conspiracy.
And folks, again, if there's no hope, if there's no rock-solid values on which to build your future, understand it all degenerates down into chaos. I think that that is really the conclusion I have from secular humanism. It will degenerate into chaos.
Yes, indeed.
Well, in Chapter 4, you discuss England. Now, I do a lot of discussing of England. I find them disgusting because although people around the world like to say, well, England is nothing more than America's satellite, it is absolutely the antithesis, folks. The United States is not too much more than a headless body getting its orders from Britain.
Well, it does, but that's because the Freemasons, the Duchy of Hanover, took over the throne of England in 1717 and set up Freemasonry as the ruling force in England, and we are directed by England because of Freemasonry. Now, most people think that England was the origin of the United States, but in fact, we rebelled against England. 52% of the inhabitants of the United States were of German descent. And so in World War One and World War Two, our logical predilection would have been to fight with Germany against England. But because of the Freemasonry, we were lured into coming in on England's side and fighting the Germans of the 52% of the people of the United States.
Now, that's interesting. I didn't know. Well,
Germany missed by one vote being the national language of the United States instead of England.
Now, it missed by one vote? Oh, my goodness.
One vote only, because many of the American settlers spoke German and were from Germany, and they wanted to German as the national language of the United States after the Revolution. And it missed by one vote, and that's why we're speaking English today.
Now, that is fascinating. Again, prior to the information I received from you, I was not aware that we had that many Germans. As a matter of fact, that's kind of a little-known thing in the history books. I don't find
that. Oh, it isn't mentioned at all. And I knew it because I have many German friends in New York, and one of my best friends was George Sylvester Viereck, whose father was the illegitimate son of Kaiser Wilhelm I, and because of that family background, Sylvester became the leader of the German Americans of the United States in the 1920s and 30s, and he represented Germany during both World Wars, but he was very incompetent. He was a poet and not a propagandist, and so he was probably the real reason why we went in on the side of England instead of Germany.
Well, of course, now, when you say that, it conjures up images that maybe we need to define a little bit, because a lot of people might think, well, now, hold it. You're talking about backing Hitler, right?
Kaiser, and the Kaiser happened to be Sylvester Viereck's first cousin. You would have been backing the Kaiser, that's true.
No, and I was being facetious there with
Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
Hitler. No, we wouldn't have been backing
Kaiser,
Hitler, of course not.
Yeah, no, Kaiser Wilhelm, though, he was a very interesting man, and I find that also fascinating that the history books have almost completely eliminated any talk or any mention about Kaiser Wilhelm or what he was up to or his faith.
Well, he was demonized by British propagandists during World War One, and it was so successful that I don't think Kaiser Wilhelm ever regained his status as a world leader
to this day. Yeah, and now the nature of that was, wasn't he a bit rebellious towards the forces of Freemasonry, Kaiser Wilhelm?
Oh, he was indeed, and Hitler was too, by the way. Hitler banned Freemasonry and the Nazis, and of course, and the Nazi regime, and of course that's another reason that he's demonized again today, because he closed down, and Mussolini closed down the Freemason lodges in Italy also. So this made them the enemy.
Well, now, so that raises some questions then. Now, I know, I've read Douglas Reed's work, and folks, Douglas Reed was a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, or I should say photojournalist, when he was with the London Times, wasn't he?
Yes, Douglas Reed was one of the preeminent journalists of the world during his period. He's totally forgotten now. Of course, he's been blacked out, actually. But his books are very powerful.
They sure are. As a matter of fact, though, I think many or most of them are no longer available here in the United States. I think that is part of the stuff that's hit the banned book list.
So. Oh, it is, and that's why they're available through rare book dealers. That's about the only place you can find them.
And, yeah, no, as a matter of fact, I was trying to bid on one of his books in California. It was a second edition book, and the guy wanted an outrageous amount of money for it, and I was trying to act as a broker for another guy to pick it up, but they just wanted too much. And they didn't care what was in it. It was just that they knew the book had been banned, and they knew it had some value.
Well, they knew it was in demand. That was the thing. It was that it's scarce. It's rare.
Yeah, we should probably back off of that subject for now to stay chronological and get to, we talked about England a little bit. Now, what about the French Revolution? Because, again, history kind of is sketchy on the French Revolution, and those of us that are a little bit more intimate on what actually happened, you know, that was a major deal, in my opinion. The French Revolution, it definitely was one of the most manipulative revolutions in history.
Oh, it certainly was. Well, both the rebellion against the Kaiser, or the war against the Kaiser, and the war against the French king in the French Revolution were part of the war against the Semites, the descendants of Shem. And both of those, of course, both of those aristocracies were wiped out.
Well, yeah, and basically, again, through the forces of Masonry, tied in with the international bankers, correct?
Yes, and of course, in the French Revolution, you had a concerted effort to exterminate the descendants of Shem and the French aristocracy.
Well,
but they called it liberty, equality, and fraternity, and liberty, equality, and fraternity was simply a code word for wiping out the descendants of Shem.
Well, yeah, and the manipulation that went on was rather interesting. I mean, I believe at one time during the French Revolution, didn't the peasants storm the palace and the king came out by himself, talked to him, and said, "What's your problem? I mean, you know, I'm a good king, and haven't I done this and that?" And they actually walked away and backed down?
Oh, yes, because he had been a good king. But later on, in the French Revolution, this is a very little-known fact, the principal victims of the French Revolution were not the aristocracy, they were the peasants. The peasants were massacred because after the Jacobins, or the Rothschild agent, took over, they executed King Louis and Marie Antoinette, and they took over the country, and then they began to exterminate the peasants because they did the same thing that Stalin did in the 1930s in Russia. They exterminated the peasants because the peasants wouldn't turn all over all their grain to these criminals that took over the country.
Mm.
And the peasants, the amount of aristocrats killed in France was very small compared to the massacres of the peasants, which were hundreds of thousands of people.
Well,
and you won't read that in any history book either.
No, you don't. And I was a bit of a student of history too. Of course, it was PC history, politically correct history. So again, very interesting. Well, we go for the French Revolution, and I know that we had. There was a lot of sympathy, supposedly, from France in regard to the American Revolution that took place over here. And, you know, I always wonder the nature of that sympathy. I mean, you know, you get through having your revolution, and you got all sorts of stuff going on, and then all of a sudden you're buddies or you want to help out America. It just didn't seem right to me. You'd think they want to kick back and pick up the pieces of their own country, and yet again, I've heard there was sympathy from the French towards the Americans. I always felt that that was kind of a veil, and there was some other agenda why the French were so eager to help the Americans.
Oh, there was, because our principal representative in France who helped set that up was Benjamin Franklin, who was a leading Freemason. And it was Franklin's influence with the Freemasons in France which brought about the support of the Americans in their war against England. And of course, England was a Freemason country also, but you had the French Freemasons and the English Freemasons were at that time sort of rivals, because the Grand Orient was in France, the Grand Orient Lodges, and they were rivals of the York Rite of Freemasonry, which is in England. And it was that rivalry which really led to the colonists winning the war, the revolution, in the 1780s.
Hmm. Very interesting, very interesting. Again, folks, I guarantee you won't hear any of that in a history book.
Not a word of it, no.
Well, now the Civil War. Let's get into the Civil War a bit. What were the circumstances behind that, please? The real circumstances.
Well, the real Civil War, the circumstances of the Civil War originated because the Rothschilds decided that America was growing too fast and becoming too powerful as a world power. And so they decided to split it into two smaller countries to balkanize it, and they did this through the issue of slavery. They set up the abolitionist movement in New England, and the bankers there spent millions of dollars to promote abolition or the freeing of the slaves. But in order to have the Civil War, they had to create a Southern army. There was no army of the Southern states. In other words, we only had the United States Army in Washington, D.C., based in Washington, D.C. So The Rothschilds spent millions of dollars sending Freemasons through the South in order to organize local hunting clubs and shooting clubs, which became the basis of the Confederate Army. And this was all done from Cincinnati by the Knights of the Golden Circle, which was the branch of the Illuminati, which set up the whole Civil War. In other words, we would never have had a Civil War, because you cannot have a war when only one side has an army. So the Knights of the Golden Circle, out of Cincinnati, traveled through the South for 18 years, setting up paramilitary groups throughout all the southern states, and that became the Confederate Army.
Hmm. So I keep seeing the hand of Freemasonry, which, again, that's simply the modern delineation, isn't it? It wasn't always known as Freemasonry, was it?
No, it wasn't. Came under various guises. Well, Masonry itself, you know, was actually the builder's trade during the Middle Ages, and these people were builders. They were stonemasons and carpenters, but then it took on a mystical aspect through what they call speculative Freemasonry, and speculative Freemasonry was no longer builders and carpenters, but they were teachers and intellectuals and revolutionaries and so forth. In other words, Masonry underwent a tremendous transformation when the House of Hanover took over the British throne in 1700.
Mm. Well, we're going to hold it right there, and Bordoff, I need to talk to you, too, if I could. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. According to the news and medical journals, Americans are under assault from a new monster, fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia affects millions with supposedly no real cure in sight. Well, tell that to Michael Widort, myotherapist. After already achieving national acclaim for the protocols he has developed within industry, healthcare, and sports, Mike's next target is fibromyalgia. Mike is showing his bold claim, the man who killed fibromyalgia, real and valid. Without fail, his success rate eclipses modern medicine by quantum leaps. Mike's knowledge of the human lymphatic system and self-oxygenation principles can and will likely put many allopathic doctors out of business. Mike's website is oil-it.tv, oilit.tv, and he can be reached for consultation at his toll-free number, 866-645-4888, 866-645-4888. Call now for a consultation.
Big Berkey, the elegant water filter, a showpiece that will complement your finest decor. Queen Victoria, who ascended to the throne in 1837, used this system for the royal household. The high-grade polished stainless steel makes a sparkling attraction that your friends will envy. The Big Berkey reduces up to 99.9% of harmful bacteria, particulates, cysts, and parasites. It also reduces chlorine, rust, organic pesticides, and herbicides. It costs only about 50 cents per month because the ceramic filters can be re-cleaned up to 100 times or more. This elegant system sets up in minutes without any need for plumbing, tools, or electricity, yet provides years of fresh, clean drinking water. And best of all, it's durable, easy to clean, and designed to last a lifetime. Order the elegant Big Berkey, normally $279, for the special price of only $220. Order now and save $59 by calling toll-free 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Recommended for outdoor emergency use in California and Wisconsin, not yet available in Iowa.
Are you one of the millions of Americans who suffer from gum disease like gingivitis? If so, hope has arrived. I'd like to introduce you to Vitamir. Vitamir is the all-natural toothpaste and mouthwash designed to protect against and promote healing of gum disease. Unlike most toothpaste and mouthwash, Vitamir contains no alcohol, no sugar, and no fluoride. Instead, Vitamir products contain zinc to inhibit plaque growth and promote healing, folic acid to reduce inflammation, myrrh used since biblical times for gum disease, and clove oil. Gum disease is serious. Research links gum disease to health problems like diabetes, stroke, and heart disease. With a regular program of oral hygiene, including Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash, your chances of experiencing gum disease will be greatly diminished. Find out for yourself why health professionals across America are recommending Vitamir. Order yours today from Cliff Scott Enterprises. Call toll-free 800-569-4340. That's 800-569-4340, or visit their website at www.cliffscott.com.
You know, friends, there's so many fascinating facts about the American Revolution. I find it amazing. I believe the British had in Georgetown several thousand troops stationed for an extended period of time after we allegedly won the Revolutionary War.
Oh, I think so. And also, the judges of the United States continued, after we won the Revolutionary War, the judges in our courts continued to rule in favor of the English. In other words, all of the loans and mortgages that the Bank of England and British lords had over the American people, the judges upheld that they had to be paid in full.
So
and that's
a little
known fact of history also.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if we really did win the war, because it seems like financially we lost, and we lost big time.
We lost big time, and they set up the first bank of the United States. The first central bank of the United States was set up in 1787, at the very time that we were establishing our Constitution.
Now, that's interesting. I was not aware of that.
Well, Thomas Jefferson opposed it. But George Washington, who was then the president, and Thomas Jefferson was Secretary of State, Jefferson bitterly opposed it, but Washington agreed and signed the charter of the First Bank of the United States. But when that expired in 1812, Jefferson was the president, and he refused to renew it. And this is why the British attacked the United States again. And the only reason in the history books for the War of 1812 is that Jefferson refused to renew the charter of the central bank, the first bank of the United States. And you won't find that in any history book either.
No, as a matter of fact, you don't find hardly anything about the War of 1812.
Oh, no, because they won't tell you why it started. It started because Jefferson refused to renew the charter of the first bank of the United States. And you won't find that at Harvard, and you won't find it at Yale, or you won't find it at Princeton. Your children can go there, and you can spend all the money getting an education, and they won't hear one word about the true history. I really have to write the history of the United States, because it is all the wars are bankers' wars, and all of the government operations are the conspiracies of the international bankers.
Yeah, I was going to say about the only thing I remember from 1812 prior to being educated and motivated as an adult was a very dynamic piece written by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky.
Oh, yes, the 1812 overture.
Yeah, that was about it. Interesting. And folks, again, the Civil War now... I mean, the War of 1812. Now, how much influence did that have in the Civil War? I mean, folks, wars are preluded by wars. They're segues, they're bridges into the next war. I mean, and that's where we were going next, the Civil War, the bloodiest, most costly war in U.S. history, and a war that neither side won.
Oh, no, everybody lost, because the bloodletting in this country was terrible. And it was the greatest bloodletting per capita of any country in the world. It was a massacre on both sides.
Mm.
Well, look, at Gettysburg alone, Lee continued to send the Confederate troops up against the Pickett's charge and so forth, when the Union had already overwhelmingly established the control of the bluffs and hills around Gettysburg. And Lee simply wiped out the Southern Army right there at Gettysburg.
Now, that was weird. That was almost like a setup. I was sitting there thinking...
It seemed very strange, yeah.
Yeah, Lee was not a dummy. I mean, he was a very competent military man. And yet, folks, again, you tell your people to go do something stupid. You got to wonder, which side was he working for? And we're going to pick it up at the top of the hour. We've got a minute and a half break for station ID. We'll be back right at the top.
The Big Berkey, the ultimate water filter. It's the most economical water filter you can buy. Costs less than $1 per month because the ceramic filters can be recleaned.